And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Tonight we're talking with Mark Allen. He has written a book called The Greatest Secret of All, Simple Steps to Abundance, Fulfillment, and a Life Well Lived. I like Mark Allen's book, one, because it is so simple, but he also reminds us of some very key points that we seem to all, I'm not sure if it's find difficult or just we keep needing to be reminded. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Lori. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So I really enjoyed your book. I mean, there's, of course, a lot of information out there about the law of attraction. You call it the law of manifestation. I like the way you have spoken about your book. But part of this journey really begins with you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you, well, I mean, the story really starts in your 30s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or at really. Least turning 30.
Yeah, turning 30, that day changed my life. I woke up in a state of shock, realizing I wasn't a kid anymore. Somehow, all through my 20s, I felt about 17. And it felt totally fine to just pay no attention to money or anything and to be a struggling artist and spiritual seeker. And when I look back in a way in my 20s, I had the opposite of the Midas touch. Whatever I touched completely fell apart. I was born with one very important thing that I teach to this day, and that some people take years to learn, some people never learn. But I was born knowing it was very important to do what I loved. And that has really served me well over the years. I think it's because I had two older brothers, and one did just what the parents wanted, and I noticed he wasn't passionate about his work. He was a business major and went into work for a large corporation, just what my dad wanted him to do, and he wasn't really passionate about it. He was passionate about golf and fishing, either. Mm. He should have been a golf instructor or a fishing guide or something. But actually, later in his life, he found something he was very passionate about, so nice. That was good. But then my second brother came along, and he was where the first one was the parents' dream, the second was the parents' nightmare. He fought them every step of the way and resisted them. And it was a battle that he only made up with my dad literally on my dad's deathbed. Mm-hmm. They finally realized they were a lot alike, and they made up. And somehow my dad's passing was very healing to the family, which maybe an odd thing to say, but it really was. But I think I came along then, and even before I could put it in words, I realized it doesn't do any good to do what your parents want, because you have to do what you want. But it doesn't do any good to fight them either.
Yeah.
So I just, from the beginning, just did what I wanted to do and just ignored my father wanting me to go into business. I wanted to be an actor and a musician, and that's what I became in my 20s. First, I was a theater major in college, and then I got into a great theater company that did plays where I wrote some of the music and
nice.
Played music, and it was a wonderful experience, but the company fell apart. Mm-hmm. And then I got into another company, and that just completely fell apart. If I knew then what I know now, I would have sat down with the managers and said, let's see how we can make this work financially. But I was totally clueless financially, and they didn't work. And then I followed my girlfriend into a Zen center, and I got kicked out for breaking the rules. And then I followed her to a back-to-the-land experiment that was just a disaster. Lasted about 5 months or something, and then I was a spiritual seeker around what we call the spiritual smorgasbord of Berkeley in my 20s, and then I had a rock band for a while, and that fell apart. And then my late 20s, I don't even remember, several years passed, and I didn't do much of anything. I had a few jobs here and there. I got fired as a busboy and dishwasher for being too slow, I remember. And I got fired as a typesetter for not showing up on time.
Mm.
And then I turned 30. I had no money. I had no job. I was scrounging, a word we used all the time, to get $65 together for rent on this one-room slum apartment in a funky part of Oakland, California. Cheap rent, $65 a month. And I remember thinking even then, it was kind of magical where at the end of every month I somehow came up with $65, just enough. I was creating just enough every month. Even if I only had $30 into the last day of the month, so, like a friend would call and I'd help them move and I'd make $35. It would just sort of magically appear that I would just make enough, you know. And that was somehow cool through my 20s. But the day I turned 30, I was not happy anymore with that. I didn't want that to continue. And I spent a lot of the day pacing up and down. And that day changed my life. I did a few simple little things on paper that day that I teach to this day, because that day I was a different person that evening than I was that morning. That morning I had no clue of what I wanted to do with life. I hadn't really reflected on it much. I was just going a day at a time kind of thing. And I spent most of the day pacing up and down, and I started thinking about my life and asking myself, what do I want to do? I'm 30 now. I'm an adult. I'm not a kid. And the thing that really set it all in motion was I remembered back to my early 20s in our disastrous back-to-the-land experiment. And one night we were sitting around a fire, and this couple said, let's play this game we play at church camp. Let's imagine 5 years have passed and everything has gone as well as you could imagine. What would your life look like? And we all went around the fire and said something. I don't remember a word of what I said, so it had no impact on my life whatsoever. But the day I turned 30, I remembered playing that game, and I thought, this is a good idea. And I did something that I begin my seminars with to this day. I took a sheet of paper, and I wrote ideal scene at the top. And I imagined 5 years had passed, and my life had somehow just miraculously done as well as I could imagine. What would it possibly look like? Before that, I hadn't even dared to dream like that in a way. And it takes courage, because as soon as you start writing, doubts and fears come up. And you just have to put those aside and dare to dream your ideal. So I thought, okay, 5 years have passed. I'm 35. What kind of life do I want? And much to my amazement, because I'd had zero interest in business, I still had all these conflicting beliefs about money and about my abilities or lack of abilities. Much to my amazement, I wrote, I have a successful publishing company that cruises along. It doesn't even require me to show up much. You know, and it publishes my books and books of my friends and others and my music. And I have a big white house on the hill in Marin County, California, that was across the bay from Oakland in this beautiful area that's mostly natural. And even though doubts and fears were already rushing in, I kept with it. And I added what may be my unique contribution to humanity so far. I added, when I dared dream my ideal, I thought, and I don't work too hard at this. I only work when I feel like it. I have a life of ease. I have success with ease. Lots of financial success, but not any of this 40, 50, 60-hour-a-week stuff that I had been told vehemently you needed to do if you started your own company. I wanted to start my own company, but only work when I felt like it. And I remember as soon as I wrote that, just doubts and fears overwhelmed me, just saying, impossible, Mark, never been done. And you can't do that. You don't know a thing, you know. You're a space case musician. You know, I'd had a rock band and really gotten into that lifestyle. But when I look back, it was totally, we were clueless about management.
Right.
We had really good music and gave these great performances because that's where our attention was. But we were not managed at all. if I knew then what I know now, I would have sat down with the band and said, look, we don't have a manager. We got to make a plan. What's our plan? You know? And the first thing that would have been obvious was, well, we're writing original music. We should record this music. And, but we never did that.
Never,
no.
Oh.
We didn't think that far ahead.
Yeah. It was a different time.
Yeah, it was. And we just made enough money with the band somehow to pay the rent. And that was good enough in my 20s, but right. It was not good in my 30s. So I literally wrote down my ideal scene. I stared at that for a while. I put my doubts and fears off to the side and realized within that was a list of goals, and I wrote a list of goals. Then I rewrote the list of goals as affirmations, as if they're now coming into being. So I wrote down, I am now creating a successful publishing company in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way. I am now writing some beautiful books that have great impact in the world in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. I wrote this list, and I started affirming that list. And then over the next few weeks, for every major goal I had, plans would just come to mind. And I literally took one sheet of paper for each major goal and wrote down a one-page plan. And that is it. That's my entire system. The first half of The Greatest Secret of All, I just summarize that and say, this is the simple system I found for manifestation. That's all that I needed, other than a way to then deal with all the doubts and fears that came up.
Right. Okay. So you also used the word experiment.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's the first thing I did to overcome the first wave of doubts and fears. As I started writing my ideal scene, I remember them vividly. I remember as if it was yesterday. I remember the exact thoughts that arose, the exact doubts and fears. It was, oh, that's way too much, Mark. You want to start a company and write books and record music and get into real estate. Oh, that's way too much. Just pick one thing and focus on that. And I just had this sense, whatever I picked on, then my doubts and fears would say, you want to build a successful company, or you want to write a successful book? Look at your background. You've done nothing. You're a space case. You're a failure. Everything you've touched has fallen apart. I was just overwhelmed with all these thoughts. And I remember literally pacing up and down, thinking about all this stuff. I was sort of arguing with myself. I was arguing with myself. I even think I was talking out loud, because I remember my cat looking at me like I'd gone crazy, pacing up and down, arguing with myself. And I remembered then I'd heard about Buckminster Fuller in the 60s. I never saw him speak, but some friends did, and they told me about him. And they said, he said that in his 20s he came to a point where he decided to either commit suicide or look at his life as this unique experiment. And I just grabbed onto this word experiment and literally said to my doubts and fears, look, let me try this as an experiment, to really go for this dream, to focus on this dream and go for it, but go for it in my own lazy way. And the lazy part of me loved that, this experiment, because it allowed me to be lazy, to sleep late. I've never been a morning person or anything. So my experiment was to be as lazy as I wanted to be and to work only when I felt like it, but to keep focused on my goal and work. And my doubts and fears said it will never, they were convinced, and most of my thoughts were convinced it would never, ever work. And I literally said to my doubts and fears, look, if it doesn't work, I'll be no worse off than I am right now. I was absolutely broke. I had no money. I had no family support. I was scrounging all the time for the next dollar. And even my doubts and fears had to agree with that. So I literally said, okay, this is my experiment. Don't bug me for a year, doubts and fears. Let me try this experiment of going for this dream in my own lazy way and see what happens. Within a year, I could see results. I could see it really worked, that you can be lazy even, and you can be even incompetent and not know what you're doing. But if you keep focused on a goal and keep coming back to that goal with persistence, you will move toward that goal. Years later, I heard the analogy that a plane flying... let me back up. I used to think you had to be sort of focused on your goal maybe half the time to make it happen and only undermine yourself with doubts and fears half the time to make any progress.
Nice.
That was my theory, kind of. But then I heard the analogy later on that a plane, when it's flying, is off course over 95% of the time, but the pilot just keeps correcting over and over. As soon as I heard that, I remember thinking, that's the story of my life. I may have been off course 95% of the time, definitely the majority of the time, but I kept correcting over and over. I kept pulling out my list of goals as affirmations that I would carry around with me. I kept reading those goals. I made a promise I'd read them once a day. I didn't even do that. I just met a woman that had come to my seminar. She said, when she ended my seminar, she was on the verge of bankruptcy and losing her house in foreclosure, and she was selling real estate, and in the crash of 08, her income just dried up, and she was almost bankrupt. She went to one of my seminars. She came out of there with a list of affirmations written like I did. Her affirmations were, I am now paying off my house in full in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way. I am now building my liquid assets to $1 million in liquid assets in an easy and relaxed manner. She had real expansive goals. And she went to the health club every morning, she said, and did like half an hour on a treadmill or something with the written goals right in front of her face, and she just read the goals over and over and over. And she said she knows because of reading those goals as affirmations, she started getting these creative ideas. She could do this, she could do that. Over the next week or so after she started, she said she went through about 5 ideas or so before she came, an idea popped up in her subconscious, into her consciousness, that she could work with banks and help people in her situation refinance houses they were in danger of losing. And she went to the banks and worked it out, and I had just met her a few months ago. She came to another seminar and told her story, and her house is paid in full, and she's got liquid assets. She's virtually reached the goals she's been affirming for a couple of years. And I discovered that too. There's a real power in carrying a list of written goals as affirmations. I did not have the discipline to read them a half an hour a day. I didn't even read them every day. But I obviously read them enough times so that my subconscious mind accepted it and ran with it and started giving me plans.
Right.
And I wrote these simple one-page plans for my company, for my writing, my music, and my real estate. And I started implementing the plans in my own lazy way.
Which is wonderful. I mean, it's amazing how simple you make it. And I know that we're going to talk about our fears and doubts, because that's probably one of the major... it's just one of the major issues that we seem to have, that when we, you know... I mean, there's so many things that I think about when you talk about this, because... You know, a lot of people will write an affirmation, and I know that you actually say it in your book that, you know, it really has to come from your words, and I think that's really important. But a lot of people, you know, say these affirmations, have absolutely, they're basically saying it like their rosary. You know, it has no meaning, there's no emotion to it, and, you know, there's no energy being put into it, so, you know... What is it doing? Probably not a lot, because there's probably a lot of counter beliefs that are probably interfering.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I really have come to believe, and it's true, the older I get, the more simply I see things and the more simply I can express things to myself and to others. And I really believe, and it's not that I ever made any kind of leap of belief or leap of faith or came to believe something. I don't say to people, you have to believe this at all. I just say, try it and see what happens in your experience. Just watch. Try these things. Because in my experience, I've come to believe that the universe says yes to every thought in some mysterious way. I really believe we're all connected to something way beyond our limited little conscious mind and our limited little physical bodies, even, you could say. Even though our physical bodies are miraculous, our minds are amazing with almost unlimited potential. The thing that never ceases to amaze me is we're connected in some mysterious way to something way beyond ourselves, far greater forces, even the forces of creation, you could say, and call it what you will. I usually call it subconscious mind, or you can even call it the universe. You can call it God, if you're comfortable with that word. Whatever it is, I really think, from my experience, it says yes to every thought we have. So even when we do a rosary without much emotion, it has a positive impact. When we do an affirmation or prayer with emotion, it really has a more positive impact. I'm convinced prayer works, affirmations work, declarations work. Like the Bible says, and you shall decree a thing, and it will come true in your life or something, and light will shine in your ways. It says in the book of Job, decrees absolutely work. All of it works. Positive thinking works. Auto-suggestion works. The self-hypnosis of the older books work. All this stuff in all these books and all these teachers and traditions works. When we affirm, I am now creating the life of my dreams in an easy and relaxed manner, the whole universe says yes and starts showing us, sort of whispering in our ear, what the next steps are. If, though, our next thought is, oh, but it's so hard. It's so hard to succeed. So few people succeed. The universe says, yes, it's hard for you with that thought, yes. And I think that's it. The universe says yes to every thought, and our negative thinking is just as powerful as our positive thinking. And it's our negative thinking that takes us off course.
Right.
But fortunately, we can be off course most of the time if we just keep course correcting and keep coming back to this dream we have. I'm going to make it work. I know I can make it work doing what I love to do. And because I have a plan, I have a written plan, and I'm taking steps toward that plan, the universe says, yes. And then the next morning, you're like, oh, this is so hard. There's so many details. It's so frustrating. The universe says, yes, and you're off course again. But then you remember and you get back, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to take the next simple step in front of me. Each step is very easy. I built a multi-million-dollar business being totally lazy, not doing mornings, not doing Mondays. I never worked over, maybe 20 to 25 focused hours a week is all I do. When I find a 40-hour work week inhumane for me. It's just too long. I want to take a break. I want to go. I play music. I do my ideal, which is always from the beginning. When I dared dream my ideal, I saw me wandering around my big house and my big yard that's very private with nothing to do. I have blocks of time with nothing to do. And I have a family, too. And so I looked at my typical week. I once figured there's about 90, if you figure you have like, I think I figured 11 and a half hours a day for sleep and showering and eating and stuff, and that frees up you have about 12 and a half hours a day, I figured, or 90 hours a week, I figured, that you're conscious and, able to do stuff.
Right.
And when I just sort of added up the typical week and the hours, I realized I spend about 30 hours a week, sort of focused on work-related stuff, about 30 hours a week with my family, and about 30 hours a week alone.
Mm.
every morning, all Mondays, I'm alone. And that's what I need and want. That's my ideal. And it absolutely works. This 40-hour work week idea is totally arbitrary.
Right. It's just a lot of people believe that that's what you have to do, and a lot of people work for other people, so they have to do what they're being told.
Yep. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you said dealing with doubts and fears. I think the two essential things to get, and I try to give the essential away of what I know every time I talk, the two essentials, one, dare to dream and go for it, make a plan, and two, deal with those doubts and fears that come up inevitably. As soon as you dare to dream. The bigger the dream, the bigger the doubts and fears. I fortunately wandered into a seminar when I was 28 years old in Berkeley, California, led by this man named Ken Keyes Jr. He had written a book called Handbook to Higher Consciousness. And his contribution to humanity was he understood about beliefs. He told us, he said, you know, your beliefs, when you look at them, let's really look at our beliefs. Don't just assume them and accept them all. Let's look at them all. Are they true in themselves? Well, there are many other people in the world that have very different beliefs than you do. Like, say, for instance, is the universe abundant or is it scarce? Is there scarcity? Is it hard to make money or not? He said, The fascinating thing about our beliefs is they're not necessarily true in themselves, but they become true in our experience if we believe them.
Right.
They're not true in themselves. Other people have different beliefs, and we can even change our beliefs. I went into that workshop really thinking it was the universe was scarce. There somehow wasn't enough money to go around. I even had some kind of guilt. If I made money, I'd somehow deprive somebody else or something. I had some weird guilt around making money or something. I came out of that workshop realizing that the universe is actually totally abundant. Totally. I mean, hugely, vastly abundant. There's no shortage of money in the world. It's just like food. There's no shortage of food. We have a tremendous amount of food. But people are starving. We have a distribution problem.
Yeah.
It's the same with money. There's many, many people with billions, literally, of dollars all, you know, stashed in all different kinds of forms, and other people are trying to live on a dollar a day. There's plenty. We just have a distribution problem. So I learned from Ken Keyes how to look at our beliefs and then change those that weren't working for us.
And what about the unconscious ones? What about the ones that we just, I mean, it's really about just becoming aware, as being as conscious as possible and becoming aware of them when they come. But, I mean, there are a lot that seem to come from, you know, the collective unconscious that is like, whoa, seriously, I believe this?
Yeah. Those are the best ones to look at. And those we can see when we get upset, when we get frustrated. In a way, the more upset we get, the better, because the more able we are to really become aware of that stream of thoughts. When we have these real upset feelings and our stomach is churning, and then we have this vivid stream of thoughts, if we become aware of what's going through our head, what we're telling ourselves, we can see the beliefs. We're telling ourselves all these beliefs. I remember vividly doing this core belief process, which Ken taught us, Ken Keyes, and it's in the book, too, The Greatest Secret of All. And it's just answering 8 questions. And one of the questions is just, what are you telling yourself? And he did. He said it's best to do it when you're upset. It works far more effectively because you do get down to those real deep beliefs. What are you telling yourself? What are you going through your mind? And I realized what was going through my mind was I was a fool with money. I just didn't understand it. I was an idiot. Maybe some people had a gene to understand money and some didn't, and I didn't. And that's why I was such a financial, you know, retard. And that was going through my mind. I I was a fool and I was out of control. And then I realized, okay, that was my belief. I believed I was a fool with money. And a fool and his money are soon parted. I had that deeply etched in my subconscious. So regardless of how much money I made, it was gone. I was incapable of being sensible around money. Literally, once I realized that, I started affirming exactly the opposite. And these affirmations are powerful, and I literally started affirming when I hit my financial low. I started my company at 30 with no money. The first 5 years were chaos and losses because I didn't know what I was doing at all, and I had a lot of negative beliefs about money, thinking I was a total fool. So by 35, I was $65,000 in credit card debt, and this was the early 80s when that was a lot of money, mm-hmm. a lot more money than it is today. And my company was on the verge of bankruptcy because our distributor that we'd helped start had collapsed and didn't pay us for 6 months' worth of sales. So we were on the edge of bankruptcy, and both personally and the company. And that's when I really did an effective, what Ken called, core belief process. I realized my belief was, I'm a fool with money. I'm out of control. I'm just an idiot. That was my belief. So I started affirming, when I was $65,000 in credit card debt, I started affirming, I am sensible and in control of my finances. I am creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. That was my affirmation I came up with. I wrote it down about five times on different things. I posted it around my bedroom, my office at home, my office at work. I had it on a wall in big letters. I carried it around with me in my billfold. Whenever this anxiety around money came up, I would affirm, I am sensible and in control of my finances. I'm creating total financial success. And to me, that affirmation felt really good. I had a good feeling. And over the matter of probably a few weeks, definitely a few months, things really shifted in my life. And I became far more sensible about finances. I realized finances are very simple. You don't need to study it in college. I'd never taken a course in business or anything. And you don't need to study finances. All you need to know is some very simple math, adding and subtracting. If you can do that, you can understand finances, because you just need to make more than you spend. That's the bottom line in terms of what you need to know financially to create a successful business and career. Keep a downward pressure on your expenses and you find some income that exceeds your expenses. That's it. That's everything I know about finances.
Wow. you mentioned in the book that within every problem is an opportunity.
Yes. That quote changed my life, too. When I hit my financial low, and I think it was just right around exactly the same time I started affirming I'm sensible and in control of my finances, I was driving into work. It was another stressful day. On the way in the radio, I just heard somebody quote, later on I found it was Napoleon Hill, somebody said, within every adversity is an equal or greater benefit. And those words, maybe it was because I'd started affirming, I'm sensible and in control of my finances, I am creating total financial success, that I was open to hearing it. But I felt like I heard those words in a way that I really got them. And I literally pulled over on the shoulder and wrote it down because I did not want to forget it. I thought, knowing me, I'd forget it by the time I, 5 minutes later got to work. So I pulled over and wrote it down. Within every adversity is an equal or greater benefit. And then I put it in my own words. I said, within every problem is an opportunity. And I put that on my wall in my office in big letters. And later on, I added a phrase I read in the Bhagavad Gita that we did a beautiful edition of, 5,000-year-old wisdom from India. Mm-hmm. In there, it says, even in the knocks of life, we can find great gifts. I wrote that down. And I literally then, when people would come in the office saying, "We got another problem, Mark," looking back, I realized I'd been just so focused on the problems, I'd been overwhelmed with the problems of near bankruptcy and a distributor that didn't pay us for 6 months. There'd been one problem after another. I hadn't been focusing on the opportunities. And with that phrase in big letters in front of my face, I would acknowledge the next problem. You know, "Oh, we didn't get paid this month either." And okay, that's a problem. But I literally started asking myself, what are the opportunities here right now? What are the benefits, even within this problem? Napoleon Hill said, within every problem is the seed of an equal or greater benefit. Within the problem itself, if you study it and ask what benefits can there be, you start getting answers. I was on the verge of bankruptcy, and I started saying, what are the opportunities here in bankruptcy? What are the benefits in nearly going bankrupt? What are the gifts I have? And I started getting answers. And they're the best answers because they come from within, from yourself. We're all creative geniuses, I'm convinced. We don't ask ourselves the right questions, and we don't dare to dream.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty much it. I want to bring up that I did an interview with nuclear physicist Thomas Campbell, and I don't know if you know him, but he's very cut and dry in his whole basis of his theory. Is he comes from science and he brings in metaphysics, and he uses science to prove how everything works. And you know, his thing about the law of attraction is that, yeah, it works. The thing is, we're here to evolve. And you did write that in your book. So,
yes.
You know, we are here to grow and evolve and reach our full potential and contribute to the betterment of the world. And that's what you wrote. And so that's also what he believes as well. He says, yes, you can, if you want to focus all of your energy on, you know, making a Mercedes, I'm sure that that can come to you. But does it serve your purpose? Does it help you with your true purpose, which is to grow, evolve, reach our full potential, and contribute to the betterment of the world? So why don't we talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, full disclosure, I have two brand new Mercedes. But I do realize, I mean, that doesn't make you happy, and it really isn't important. It really isn't important. I do like Mercedes. I like the safety of them. I got it because my folks came to visit. I had a little sports car, and I needed something to drive them around, and I wanted something really safe and wonderful. But it's true. You can manifest whatever you really want. Deepak Chopra once, we published one of his books called Creating Affluence, and in there he said that in his typical profound way, he said, within every desire is the seed and mechanics for its fulfillment. Within every desire we have is not only the seed, as he put, but the mechanics, meaning within that desire, we can make a plan to achieve it. We can make a plan to achieve our desires, and we can achieve them unless we undo it with our limited and negative thinking.
Right.
So it does absolutely work. We can create what we want in life. And so it's very good to think about, what do you really want? What's important? Many people want more money, and that's great. It's good to have enough money to be comfortable. If you think that, good to be comfortable and to have the resources to realize your dreams. If you think that that money or that Mercedes is going to make you happy, you're wrong. Actually, it will make you happy for about 20 minutes. You know, when you get a new Mercedes or when you reach your goal of $1 million in the bank or whatever, yes, there's a wonderful satisfaction that comes for a very brief time, and then it passes, and you're back to being yourself regardless of how much money you got in the bank. So happiness really has nothing to do with anything external. It's completely an inside job. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's great. The second half of The Greatest Secret of All, I reflect on what's really important in life. It's great to reflect on that. It's wonderful to be able to manifest what you want and to take care of yourself and others. That's great. It's wonderful to have. If you're comfortable with $1 million in liquid assets, okay, that's, you can manifest that. Or pick a number. You know, probably most people don't need $1 million. I didn't need $1 million. But I married a woman. She came from Brazil, and she'd had some struggles in her youth, and she wanted $1 million in liquid assets. I said, okay, that's our goal. We'll do this. We'll create $1 million in liquid assets. That's a wonderful goal, and it's a nice amount of security. But that, it's not important at all. No one on their deathbed has ever said, I wish I would have made more money. Mm. No one's ever said, I wish I would have spent more time at the office and gotten serious about my career. No. What do they say on their deathbed? They think of family. They think of their contribution to the world. Did they make the world a better place, or did they... Were they part of the problem or part of the solution?
Yeah, and so that really, I mean, and I believe that that's why you also come up with, you know, well, easy and relaxed, because you mentioned in your book a few times that you're lazy.
Yes. Yes, I am.
But the healthy and positive, you know, reflects this idea of growth and evolution so that we can reach our full potential. I mean, it's helping us. I mean, it's interesting because there's another author who also talks about, you know, having to make sure that you tell your subconscious that it has to do with being healthy, so that it, because your subconscious, your body wants to be healthy. It's,
yes.
I mean, that's its primary goal of the physical body is to be of primary health.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we say things that allow to become in alignment with who we are, then it allows the things to happen clearer or easier.
Yes. That affirmation that I got from Catherine Ponder, a Unity Church minister who wrote a bunch of books in the 70s, just that phrase, in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. And sometimes I even tack on, in its own perfect time, for the highest good of all. Mm. Just saying that phrase, I realized, looking back, writing something or other, I think those four words, easy, relaxed, healthy, positive, overcame a huge amount of my doubts and fears. Because what are our doubts and fears? As soon as we dare to dream something, we're overwhelmed with doubts and fears. What are there? What are they? Well, one is definitely, it ain't easy. It's hard. Mm. I hear so many people use the word hard. If we're talking, I stop them. I say, quit saying it's hard. Start affirming it's easy. Easy, relaxed. Well, our doubts and fears, well, success isn't relaxed. Most of us have this thought, it's very stressful. To be successful, many of us link success and stress. It has to be stressful. I've known people who said this to me. Life is stressful. Work is stressful. To succeed, it's stressful. Mm. You know, that's their belief. Well, if you believe it, it's true, and you're stressed out. But I've affirmed for 30 years in an easy, relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. And I've found, no, it does not need to be stressful. It can be easy and relaxed. In fact, what we love about mastery, like the great performers, we love their ease. They're not stressed out, you know. Jimi Hendrix wasn't stressed out playing at Woodstock. He just chewed his gum, said he's just jamming, and he was totally relaxed in front of 500,000 people, you know. That's mastery. And that's what we can achieve if we just affirm. There's a huge power of affirmations. If we affirm in an easy, relaxed manner, healthy and positive way, and right, some of us might think it's not even healthy. If I want to create real you know, successful something, real spectacular success, I've got to work hard. I got to work so hard, it's hard for my health. I think that's deep down in some people. I was just down in Silicon Valley, south of San Francisco here, and that's sort of in the air. A lot of people work these ridiculous hours, and they think, you know, I'll just do it for 3 years. I'll work these 16-hour days and make my fortune, and then I can relax. Literally, a guy told me that in a seminar. That's his plan, to work totally for 3 years. And I said, well, you know, that can work. But do take care of yourself and find some time to relax and rejuvenate. You can really burn out in 3 years at 16-hour days. And what happens all too often is that 3 years suddenly becomes 10 years. And that 10 years, and you haven't made your fortune yet, you know. And then you're starting to seriously burn out, and it's hard on your health.
Yeah.
So I do think just affirming those words in an easy, relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way, over and over, have overcome a huge amount of my doubts and fears.
Wow. Okay. So you also say that the four simple steps are to dream, imagine, believe, and create. And we've talked a lot about dreaming. We've talked a little bit about believing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife gave me a picture frame, and it had those four words stamped in around the edges, dream, imagine, believe, create. And I looked at it, and I said, that's the entire process that I've discovered. First, you dare to dream. Henry David Thoreau said a brilliant thing. He said, of course our castles should be in the air. That's where they have to be. Then we put foundations under them. So first, you dare to dream. Be a dreamer. Get your head in the clouds, because then we'll get our feet firmly on the earth, but with our head in the clouds. That's where all the great innovation and progress and evolution comes from, people that dare to dream with their head in the clouds. So step one, yes, dream, dream, dream. And then imagine, okay, how could I possibly realize this dream? And you take it down to earth. How can I possibly do what I love to do and really make it work for me financially? That's what a lot of people are interested in knowing. I sure am. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do what I love, which is books and music, and make it totally work financially. Okay, how do I do that? But then you just imagine possibilities. You start imagining plans. You literally make a one-page plan, and I always encourage people to have a multi-pronged strategy. Don't ever put your eggs in one basket. I've met writers who say, my plan is for you to publish my book, New World Library, my company. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to publish my book because that's my plan and that's what I'm affirming. And I say to them, don't affirm a specific publisher because we might not publish your book. In fact, odds are we won't. So, affirm instead that the perfect publisher is coming along, or that you're even self-publishing, or, you know, affirm that you're creating a book that has great impact in the world, and keep it open like that, because you want to be open to every opportunity.
Yes.
Now more and more people are just self-publishing, or some of them are just doing blogs on the internet, and they're not even publishing books, but they're succeeding as writers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of ways. So you have a multi-pronged strategy. So first you dream, then you imagine, how could this possibly happen? And then believe. And I remember the first time I thought through that, I thought, well, again, there's nothing to believe. You don't have to believe. You just have to do it, and you'll see that it works. But, yes, you do have to overcome any limiting and negative beliefs that are undermining you. It's very hard to succeed if most of the time you're telling yourself it's so hard and you're really not capable, or, you know, you don't have what it takes. It really takes talent, and it really takes luck, and it really takes money. All of those things I've had people vehemently tell me that that's what it takes to succeed, and that's what they don't have, so that's why they haven't succeeded.
Yes.
And I said, okay, you got to look at those beliefs.
Double-edged sword, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They become self-fulfilling if we believe them. I prefer to believe everyone is a creative genius in their own unique way, and everyone can succeed. It isn't as if it's some special gene or even some special talent. We all have this remarkable body, this amazing mind, and this connection to the subconscious. And we all can find a way to make it work. I'm convinced of that. So dream, imagine, believe, and then create. Then once you deal with those limiting beliefs that are blocking you, and you have a plan on paper, there's nothing that'll stop you. Absolutely nothing. Except yourself. That's the only... There is no failure. The only failure, as someone said, is quitting. Every successful person I know, including myself, has had lots of failures along the way. In fact, we love to sit around at night or at parties and laugh about our completely inept failures along the way. And the really stupid things we did that didn't work at all. And every successful person has these stories. But they're not failures. They're just, stepping stones along the way. They're things that taught us what not to do. And so you don't fear failure. There's really nothing to fear. You just take one step and do the next obvious step in front of you, and you end up at your destination.
You mention a lot, there's a whole section in your book about, learning to love and serve yourself. So service is really important, but not just others, but also yourself.
Yeah.
And, yeah, go for that.
Yeah, when I wander around my house, because that's my ideal scene, having lots of time with nothing to do and wander around my house. So I often do think about things, and I literally was asking myself, what is most important in life? What is it? I know it's not money. I know it's not success. It certainly isn't fame or anything like that. What is it? Well, obviously, what came to my mind is the most important thing of all, the greatest secret of all, in words that work for me anyway, is to love and serve yourself and others. That's what came to mind. And yes, it puts yourself first. You need to take care of yourself. Love and serve yourself as much as you'd love your own children. I heard somebody yesterday say, be your own grandmother, the way a grandmother loves her children. Mm-hmm. Love yourself that much. And serve you. Take care of your needs. Yes, we don't want to have any martyrs anymore. I'm doing it for the children, or... No. You love and serve yourself, and really find what fulfills you, and do that. And when you really become fulfilled, then you really literally have the fullness to share with others. And you love and serve other people. I've lived with that phrase for several years now, and I realize it's not only just wonderful, spiritual, and ethical advice. It's also very good, concrete business and career advice, because every business and career is built on loving and serving other people. And many people forget that.
Yeah.
And then they get into trouble. If Wall Street would have remembered that, there wouldn't have been a Wall Street meltdown. If Enron, Enron used to be the seventh largest company in the U.S., they went bankrupt. They went bankrupt because they forgot their purpose was to serve other people. They distributed energy, and they were very good at it. They were very successful at it. And they forgot their main purpose. They thought Their main purpose was to maximize shareholder value, a phrase that always makes me completely wince and realize, okay, whoever says that, they're off purpose because they're putting profits before everything else. And that kind of thinking can lead you to make some really stupid decisions. Enron, Wall Street, they made some dumb, horrifically dumb decisions that anybody with an ounce of intelligence, any normal person with any common sense on their board of directors would have said, this is ridiculous, this is illegal, this is immoral, this is unethical. Enron had like 150 different interlocking partnerships and bank accounts in the Cayman Islands and false companies that were making false orders to them to pump up their orders, and it was just absurd. And any person with any sense would have realized that's not the way to run a company. And same with Wall Street and all their investment vehicles and things, that they were not serving their public. And every bank is there to serve the financial needs of its customers. If it keeps that focus, then it does well. If it loses that focus, it can make some really dumb decisions.
Yeah. Well, that's what our fears do, isn't it?
Yeah. So that simple guidance, I think of it a lot, and think that's very good concrete guidance in business and life. We're here to love and serve ourselves, yes, take care of ourselves, but others too. That's the purpose of our career, loving and serving people.
Yeah. Is that why you believe that living and working in partnership is the solution to our personal and even global problems?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I got that key from a wonderful writer named Rhian Eisler, who had written a book called The Chalice and the Blade that's studied in a lot of colleges, fortunately. The chalice meaning the cup of partnership versus the blade of domination. Mm. And we did a book of hers called The Power of Partnership. And she shows, in the long run, partnership's always more powerful than any kind of domination or exploitation. And she gave me, really, the solution, in a way, to global problems. And I remember, I'm old enough to have been through the 60s, which was an exciting and wonderful time, but it was also totally confusing to me and a lot of other people. We had a wonderful revolution in a way. And I knew some of it was great. I knew love and peace, for instance. Those were good ideas. Love and peace, you can't go wrong with. But there was all this violence going on and stuff. And I had all this mixed feelings about all that. And it wasn't really until I read Rhian Eisler and she gave me what she calls the lens, this lens to look at the world through. And the lens is just, you look at everything, including your personal relationships, your business, your country's activities, and global things. You look at it along a scale. You ask, okay, on one side of this scale is total domination and exploitation, which much of the world has been acting on for the last 3,000 years at least. On the other end of the scale is perfect partnership. And you ask, where on the scale is this particular activity? And you realize it's very simple. Partnership works. The things in the 60s that involved partnership and love and peace work. The things that involve any kind of domination or exploitation or violence don't work. And that's a simple solution to global problems. Working in partnership works in the long run. We need, as a country and as individuals, to say to the rest of the world, the U.S. with many countries has been a very good partner, and those are the wonderful relationships we have. With other countries, we've been a dominator and exploiter, and that's led to the current mess we're in. And that's true of every country. Where they've been dominators and exploiters, they have a mess on their hands. Because dominance, exploitation leads to frustration, anger, resentment, hostility, and violence. Where partnership leads to harmony and even love. And it's smoother. So the way to run a business, the way to run a country is with partnership. Realizing every country, they need to become better partners with the world. And every government needs to be partnering with their people. The purpose of the government should be to really be public servants. Our senators call themselves public servants. Okay, they need to become public servants. Yeah. Every government that fails to feed and house and educate its people is a failure. The purpose of government, it seems to me, is, yes, to protect its people and to make sure they get the basics covered.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mark, you have been a joy. I really enjoyed this. I think your simplicity in how you approach things is very easy to understand, and I do believe that a lot of people certainly can benefit from it. You've written a lot of other books, and of course, New World Library has lots of amazing authors that, you definitely fulfilled your message and your purpose to getting, you know, a lot of great people out there and having them also be able to, you know, to be heard.
Yeah. it's been wonderful.
My favorite
book of all time, of course, is Eckhart Tolle who lives in Canada, and The Power of Now.
Right.
Best book I ever read.
So people can find out more about you by going to your website?
Yes. MarkAllen.com, MARCALLEN, or NewWorldLibrary.com.
Right. Well, again, it's been a great pleasure. I think you're doing amazing work, and I think, again, the simple way that you bring us all together should help a lot of people, if they take the time, I guess, work on their fears.
Right. There's nothing to fear. Our fears are unfounded.
There you go.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Mark.